Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us once again on the Delco Young Democast. My name is Mike DeEva. It is awesome to talk to you one more time. Today, we have something a little bit different for you guys. I got a chance to sit down with Monica Taylor, who is a member of the Delaware County Young Democrats and was also recently elected to the Upper Darby School Board. We had a great conversation, so you guys are going to hear that in just a second. This is something that we're hoping to do a lot more of in the new year, speak with candidates, activists, community leaders. If you're interested in joining us on the show to talk about something that you're passionate about or an office that you're running for, you can reach out. You can shoot me an email, mike@delcoyoungdemocast.com. I also want to make sure that there's one thing that I say during the interview. I am aware that Delaware is, in fact, on the East Coast. That was a minor brain fart on my part, and I apologize for that. It's, you know, these things happen. We try and edit the show as little as possible so that we can actually get across our thoughts and our points. So sometimes things like that slip. So my apologies. We'll just jump right into it. This is my conversation with Monica Taylor. Enjoy. Today, I am talking with Dr. Monica Taylor. She received her PhD in exercise physiology from the University of Pittsburgh. She's now a professor at the University of the Sciences in Philadelphia. She is the recruiting director for the Delaware County Young Democrats, and she was elected to the Upper Darby School Board in 2017 with more votes than any individual candidate. Dr. Monica Taylor, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
In the interest of full disclosure, I do want to say that I was a volunteer on this year's school board campaign in Upper Darby, so I did get to know you and the rest of the slate. But just to kind of get to know you a little bit, you know, we'll start just with your story. Where'd you grow up? You know, what was it like?
So I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware. My family is actually very kind of into the political scene in Delaware. My grandmother is good friends with Ted Blunt and Penrose Holland, who are both councilmen. Ted Blunt was a councilman for Wilmington, and Penrose Holland is a councilman for Newcastle County. And I remember when I was like 7 or 8 going canvassing, knocking doors for these candidates. And now I'm like, oh, full circle. Here we go. Canvassing again, but I'm canvassing for myself now. I grew up in Wilmington. I went to high school at AI DuPont High School in Wilmington, Delaware. And I then went on to college to play basketball, Division I basketball at the University of Maine. After I got done there, I went and played professional basketball in Ireland.
Excellent.
Yes, I kind of been a little, I've been all around. So after I got done playing basketball in Ireland, I worked for a little while, and then I went and got my master's in clinical exercise physiology. So working in cardiac rehab.
Oh, awesome.
And then I worked at West Point Military Academy, where I trained the female cadets.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was a great experience. I love West Point. Go Army, beat Navy. Can I say that?
You can say whatever you want. This is America.
After I got done at West Point, I went and got my PhD at the University of Pittsburgh. And then my husband and I wanted to see America and go somewhere different besides the East Coast. And so I applied to jobs in the Midwest and the West Coast. And so we ended up in Iowa and absolutely loved Iowa. I am a fan of the Midwest. I know awesome. Everybody's like, really? You loved Iowa? I did.
It's kind of unusual to hear somebody that grows up on the West Coast with that kind of like, I like calling it that in-your-face humanity, and then going to the Midwest where everybody's just kind of polite.
Right. Yes. Everybody's just nice, right?
Just a very different thing, but that's awesome.
It is. Nobody's ever in a rush, so sometimes that's a problem, right? I think you just move a little bit slower there. You get used to it, and you know, everybody's just very friendly, and it was a great place to be. So
Awesome.
And then I moved back here and took over as the program director at the University of Sciences, and now where we are today.
It's nice to hear that somebody, you know, gets started early and is kind of involved in their community or in politics, like from a young age. So that's really cool to hear. I actually, during Election Day, this past November, I was actually out there with your father in front of the polling place down here. And he was an interesting guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, knowing that that's kind of where the bug bit you there a little bit. It's kind of cool. But, you know, what was there a specific moment where a switch flipped and you realized that this was something you wanted to get involved in, or something you wanted to maybe run for yourself?
Yes. So I guess, like many Americans, November of 2016 was you know, my light switching on
common story.
Yes. I guess I had always been involved, but more on, you know, working in the soup kitchens on the weekends and on holidays and helping to, you know, help the homeless in whatever community I was in and helping with the local schools, things like that. I had never thought about running for office myself. And then last November happened, or not last November, November 2016. And it's just like, you know, I just wanted to look in to see what more I could do. That was kind of the moment where it was, I'm clearly not doing enough. And so where can I make a difference, help my community more?
That kind of also answers, you know, why was this the right time for you? You know, a lot of people got angry, but not everybody decided to throw their hat into the ring after November 2016. So what made you really, you know, what were the conversations like where you decided this is something I'm actually going
to
do?
I think I started to do more research. So I'm a researcher, and I started to look into things and see what the political landscape was in the state of Pennsylvania and how things were going. And of course, for me, I'm an educator, so education is big. So I wanted to see, you know, what was going on with our local school district. I'd heard things. And then I realized that education is under attack. You know, it's under attack here in Pennsylvania, especially, and at the federal level. And our school district needs help. And I thought that this would be a good way for me to make an immediate impact and help our community.
So what exactly, you know, this is something a lot of people hear about school boards, but they're not exactly clear on what they do. What exactly does a school board director do, at least in the Upper Darby School District?
Yes. So I know a lot of people are like, I got that question a lot at the doors. and I'm like, you really need to know what your school board does because it's important. So we do everything from hiring our superintendent and evaluating our superintendent to approving book purchases. It is a very vast job. Right now, we are in the process of facility study. So we're looking at to see where we need facilities in our school, how that will impact our classroom sizes, all these things. And this is kind of, you know, the school board takes on these ideas and tries to do the best for both what the community needs or what the community wants and what the school district needs. And so it's kind of like getting a balance between those two things.
Do you know offhand what the current class size is or not?
The class size around the district varies. Right. Okay. So we have elementary schools that have 30 plus students in a classroom, and we have some schools that have 20s. And so it kind of just varies depending on where our population density lies.
If you had to pick one single priority, knowing that there are probably about 50 priorities that all need the same amount of attention, if you had to pick one that would be the most important to you, what do you think the Upper Darby School District needs to do for its students before anything else?
I mean, this is a hard one, right? Because there are a lot of things that we could be doing or kind of need to do right now. But I think the biggest, the pressing issue is really the facilities. And we have buildings that are in disarray. We have buildings that need work. Apparently, there hasn't been any extensive look at our building since 1999. Right? Yeah, that's what I said. To see what needs to be repaired. You know, we have roofs that need to be fixed, these things. And then we also have, we have students who are being bused out of the district to Glen Olden and going to elementary school there. So we need to try and figure out a way to bring them back in the district.
We're still on the hook for, you know, the school district still pays for those students to go out of district, correct?
Right. So it's not, so we are providing their education. We're just renting a building outside of the district in order for those students to, right. But we don't have any room for them. We don't have anywhere to put them. And so, yes. And then we have the classroom issues, right? We have some schools where we have elementary kids who are sitting in a classroom, first graders, there's 30 kids in the classroom.
I don't even know how a teacher would keep control of that situation.
That does seem like a tough situation.
Yeah, yeah.
32 first graders.
Oh my goodness. Breaking out into a sweat just thinking about it.
And so we're just kind of, we're exploding at the seams, even at the middle school level. So it's just figuring out what is the best route. And it appears that it's been kind of a long process to get to the point that we're at now, but hopefully where we are now is that we can actually make some decisions and try to put a plan in place so to help our community and, you know, move us forward.
It's good to know that your focus is on the kids first.
Yes.
you know, a lot of people are, you know, more focused on the taxpayers than the kids, which is a part of it.
But. Right. It's important, right? I mean, I'm a homeowner too here. And, you know, it is important to be focused on, like I said, it's balancing the needs of our district with the wants of our community and trying to, you know, tightrope that and like really keep that on a good balance.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like an easy job you took on, so I appreciate you taking it on. Shift gears a little bit here. There was a news story that came out earlier this week about the Chester Community Charter School. Charter schools are an interesting thing. They're kind of a fraught conversation with some people. But basically, the news story was that they decided to extend this charter school's contract in the sketchiest way possible. The Chester School District is basically controlled by one person, not a school board, because they've had so many issues. It's like, you know, appointed by the whoever. They've got one person making all the decisions. The state law says that a charter school can only have a 5-year contract. So 1 year into the current contract, that one-man school board decided to extend this charter school's contract for another 5 years. For a grand total of a 9-year contract. So that's just kind of a really super sketchy thing to do with this contract. Generally speaking, you know, where do you come down on charter schools?
Charter schools, man. So our auditor general actually stated that the PA charter school law is the worst in the US. And he's, you know, he has good reason to state that. Right now, our charter schools, they take students away from the public schools. Mm-hmm. And with that student, the money that would normally go to the public school goes with that student to the charter school. Now, charter schools don't have to maintain the same standards that public schools do. They don't have to have the same academic standards. Their teachers don't even all have to be certified as teachers.
Wow. I actually didn't realize that.
Yes.
I figured they at least had to be qualified.
Yeah. No, there's the laws for charter schools in Pennsylvania are very shady, to say the least. And it's a for-profit entity. So whenever it's a for-profit entity for education, it just kind of it muddies the waters, right? Because the motives might not always be to educate our kids. You know, and so that tends to be a problem with our charter schools. And this situation in Chester is just, it's crazy to think that a charter school has a 9-year contract. So that means the Chester School District loses all accountability on that charter school, you know, and, you know, because their whole ability to regulate them is the fact that they get to basically audit them every year, do all these things, and, you know, they can hold over the fact that, oh, well, we might not renew your contract, but they have a 9-year contract, so they can't even take that as a, you know, tool to help keep that charter school on the up and up. And, you know, from what I've read, I don't know because I'm not in Chester, from what I've read and what I've seen, the school isn't performing well. You know, it has issues, and, you know, the test scores are lower than those of the students in the Chester Public School. And then one thing is that a lot of times students will go to these charter schools and then they'll realize, their parents will realize that it's not actually a good place, and then send them back to the public school. But that money that went with them to that charter school stays at that charter school, doesn't come back to the public school. So it's just another way that public schools are being attacked. You know, money's being funneled out of these public schools towards charter schools or towards vouchers for private schools. And, you know, it's putting our kids at a disadvantage.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're already starting far enough behind the eight ball with the funding formula at the state level that's, you know, benefits the richer districts over the poorer ones already.
Right.
So I'm going to ask this question anyway, because it was on my notes here on my notebook. I'm not aware of any serious plans to open up a charter school in Upper Darby. I know that there was some talk about it a couple years ago, but is that something you would even be willing to consider at this point, if the situation was right?
At the present state of charter school regulation and charter school law, I think it'd be really hard for me to take a serious consideration for a charter school here. Mm-hmm. We have great schools in our community that we offer our students, and we're even trying to break into the cyber market by offering our own cyber school for those students. So I think that yes, it'd be hard for me to consider a charter school. That's what I'm going to say on that.
I mean, based on the previous 5 minutes of the conversation, that doesn't really surprise me much. But, you know, is there any control that the district school board would have over any kind of charter schools other than just threatening to pull their contract? Or is there any direct oversight?
No. So the direct oversight is, it's by the school district or if it's a brick and mortar charter school, it's mm-hmm. by the school district where it resides and also the PA, Department of Education. And so I believe the process, I'm not positive. So I don't know everything that's involved in the process because we don't have any charter schools, brick and mortar charter schools in Upper Darby. And so the process is that they review their test scores. They get a kind of grading system and it's reviewed every year. And that can be something that's like, you know, you can use that to say, well, you need to do this X, Y, and Z for next year in order to maintain your status.
Yeah, I actually didn't realize that there was even any oversight. So that's
right.
That's
there's a little bit
good to know.
A little bit.
not nearly as much as you would have over a public school.
Right. And I mean, they have 5-year contracts. So the oversight is like technically they get these scores every year, but I don't know if they really actually have to do X, Y, and Z if you ask them that year until year 4 and they're like, oh, yes, we'll do A, B, C, D, and E because our contract is up.
You know? And meanwhile, that kid who started in kindergarten is now in 4th grade and has been getting, you know, the right. same education that wasn't good enough the entire time.
Yes. So,
you know, starting at a disadvantage right there.
Yeah.
So,
No, it's hard. It's a very shady industry, I believe, just because, you know, it's putting monetary value on education. Yeah.
Anybody who went to Trump University knows what that's all about.
Yes. So. Yes.
Like you mentioned earlier on, you played basketball over in Ireland, which is an awesome an awesome story that not a lot of people get to tell. But, you know, what was kind of like the starkest difference between living in the States and then living in Europe and kind of adjusting to that?
I think Ireland it's different, but it's not too crazy different.
Yeah, it's not like you had to learn a new language or anything.
Right. You know, I had a friend who went to Portugal and played and like didn't have as great of an experience just because of the culture and the language barrier, mostly. I loved Ireland.
Excellent.
Ireland was a great place to be. I think the culture is different, you know? You like, nobody drives. I walked everywhere. Oh, cool. And, you know, even if I lived 2 miles out of the city center, still walked in, did all my shopping, did, like, grocery shopping and small, you know, because you're not driving, so you can't go to, like, a giant Walmart and get, like, a bunch of groceries and then take them. I'm walking, so I got 2 bags worth, so, you know, it's just, like, a different world. I love playing professional basketball, though, because, you know, I love, basketball is one of my passions, and I got to play and practice, and I got paid for it. And I got to travel all around Europe while I was there. So
that's awesome. So it wasn't just teams in Ireland? It was...
No, it was teams in Ireland, but then I traveled around.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Because
awesome.
It's very easy to get from Ireland to like England, and it's very inexpensive. So like a plane, a round trip flight from Ireland to England is like $50.
Oh, wow.
You know? Yes. So it was easy to go to London whenever I wanted to.
Yeah, exactly. I can't even fly to Boston for that much.
No. So. No.
Did you have any family or close friends that went with you, or was it just kind of exploring on your own a little
nope.
bit? Or?
Went on my own. Went on my own, had teammates that end up becoming really close friends with. My husband and I try to get back whenever we can. We visit.
Oh, awesome.
They visit. My friends from Ireland cool. visit us here. They love coming over here and going shopping.
Were there a lot of Americans that went over on the team with you? Or
no.
Was it a lot of native players? Or
Yes.
Oh, awesome.
Yes. Typically for Ireland, they're only allowed to have one American per team.
Okay.
Like, it just depends on the league that you're on. Mm-hmm. I think maybe Spain, France are allowed to have maybe two, but most of the time the European professional leagues are only allowed to have a certain number of Americans per team.
Wow. That's pretty incredible. The you know,
it was a great opportunity. Yeah. And I'm very glad that I was able to get that.
That's awesome. So one-on-one against any politician, living or dead, worldwide, who you got?
All right. I'm probably going to have to say President Obama.
Of course.
I had to go for that. Although, I mean, if we can't do one-on-one, I would really love to be have been invited to the pickup games with his cabinet during his first term.
those were legendary. Yes.
Right? Like, just call me out. Let me come to Noonball, please. Thank you.
You think you got a chance against President Obama? Or?
I think I have a good chance, yeah.
Excellent.
He's getting old, you know?
All right. So just to end on kind of a serious note, you wrote an article. It's available on Medium. We'll put a link to it in the show notes here, through an organization called Run for Something, who I absolutely love. They give younger candidates support that they normally wouldn't have access to. So I just want to kind of talk about, you know, what was your experience with them, and did they give you any sort of advice that you can pass along to our listeners who might be thinking about getting involved or running for office themselves?
Well, Run for Something is a very good an organization. They do help young candidates, first time or second time candidates who are running for typically down ballot elections, right? They go as high as if you're running for like a state representative or something of that nature. And they helped me a lot. Like, anytime there were several conference calls, just kind of bouncing ideas off of each other. We have a Slack channel, so people ask questions and they have office hours on the Slack channel. We also have access to mentors. And so it goes statewide or really countrywide. You can look at anyone and, like, say there's somebody on there who's really good at communications or really good at finance. You can go on there, pick that mentor, set up a time to talk with them, and then ask them your questions.
Oh, cool.
So it's a really good resource, and it helped me a lot. I think as for any candidates who are thinking about running for office, go for it. You know, I think research, figure out what is the best way to run for the office that you're thinking of running for. Figure out who are the players in the field and how people can help you in your local community. And, you know, set up, they call it your kitchen cabinet, right? The people who are close to you that are going to have your back no matter what and are going to be there to support you. Find that and then, you know, set your plan and go for it.
Awesome. No, I think that's terrific advice for anybody that's thinking about anything. Just do it, man. Just do it. Just don't think about it too much. Think about it an appropriate amount. Right. Just do it. Dr. Monica Taylor, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it.
And thank all of you for joining us for the Delco Young Democast. Don't forget to subscribe to our show. Don't forget to rate us on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to tell your friends. We'll be talking to you again real soon.